it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
There's no better feeling than a personal win, and the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Hello and welcome back to the Stadio Podcast. I'm Musa Kwonga.
I'm Ryan Hun.
Ryan, how are you doing?
How are you doing?
Oh my goodness. The Odyssey.
It's back.
Shocking. Listen, I literally fumbled the bag.
Yeah.
My airline fumbled the bag.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you got your gear back, man.
Me too. Thank you. It's good to be back.
Carl and Seb stood in. They were great. Thanks guys, for stepping in.
Absolute legends. Thank you very much, guys.
It nearly went like redux length, that podcast, because I was just like, Moose is not here. My time.
Good.
I was
good,
like,
good.
You know, they walk into the office and they fed the gremlins after midnight, and it's just like, it was just time, like, my show. I was going to do. There was part of me that was semi tempted just to do it all on the Hamburg Derby and just put it out and just kind of pretend that was the only thing that happened that weekend.
Should have done it.
Probably would have been fired, but it's fine.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks to Carl and Seb for stepping in. That was good fun. But Moose is back.
Yes, absolutely.
And he's got all his gear.
On my travels.
So before we start, hope everyone's staying safe, staying well, wherever you are in the world. A couple of visits of admin. Really nice Writer's House episode went up on Tuesday. Flo and Ian interviewed Jonas Eidevall ahead of the Arsenal-Chelsea game at Emirates Stadium this weekend in the WSL. And then your good self and Ian and Arsenal goalkeeping legend David Seaman from the Righty's House live thing on Friday in London for Ian's collection launch.
I enjoyed that so much. That was
good,
such
man.
A lovely day.
Yeah, it was some really good great. Chat. Really interesting. So that's up now. And I thought Jonas was really good as well. Really interesting chat with Jonas. Go check Counterpress as well. Final shout before the Stadio newsletter goes out this week. Stadio.football, scroll to the bottom. Pop your email address in, sign up for our newsletters. Yeah, fortnightly it'll go out probably, so go check that. If you want to see highlights of the Hamburg Derby from last week, from in the stadium, Stadio Football on Instagram, go follow us on there. And if you do like what we do, please give us a rating review. It'd be very kind. And I reckon that's all the admin.
Mm.
And today, I'm just going to talk about the German Cup, right? That's it. Nothing else happened? And
always, without fail. There he is. Did he ever go away?
We could do 45 minutes on Saarbrücken.
Oh my goodness. You would as well.
I fucking would. Listen, I'm trapped. I'm trapped in a joyless podcast. Can someone come and get me? Please, help. I'm kidding. We're going to talk about the Premier League. We're also going to talk about Christine Sinclair, who bowed out of international football, and maybe some German Cup stuff.
Yes.
All right, let's get into it after this.
Let's do it.
Musa Kwonga.
Yes, I know you're going to do. I know, here it is.
Where would you like to begin?
We have to start by saying, Aston Villa, we can see you. Aston Villa 1, Manchester City 0. We just have to talk about that.
Villa were ferocious.
They were absolutely amazing. Look, I was watching this game, so I had, you know, in my lab, in my football lair, I was watching the two games. I was watching Man United, Chelsea, and Aston Villa, Manchester City.
Wow.
And
technology.
I could not, but technology, oh my goodness. Levels.
Mr. Okonga dual screening.
Listen, containing multitudes. Aston Villa were astonishing. And specifically, John McGinn, from the opening minute, was out of this world. This is one of the best midfield performances I have ever seen against a Pep Guardiola team. I know that's such a big shout, but I was thinking back and thinking, I have never seen Bernardo Silva so regularly out-thought and out-battled at close quarters. I think McGinn had the most dribbles, the most tackles, won the most duels, created the most chances. This was a complete performance and an absolute masterclass to the point where I was radicalized, because one of the stats websites was ranking Douglas Luiz a slightly higher performance. And I was like, no, absolutely not. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I respect the stats. I respect the XG, but that actually
he was great though.
He was brilliant. Don't get me, he was brilliant. But John McGinn produced, it was a masterpiece. It was absolutely out of this world. And to Emery's credit, you talk about ferocious, right? The press was spectacular.
Oh my God.
It was so brave.
Good.
They were hunting into these corridors. There was one bit, Bernardo Silva gets the ball, and it was like watching a gang of raccoons descend. It's like a squirrel, like finally it gets its first nut of the winter. It just grabs its first like clutch of nuts of the winter. And a gang of raccoons just descended upon him near the halfway line. Like swarming, passing angles, lanes. John Stones came back, and John Stones did some brilliant stuff at close quarters, but just it was like every space that City played into, Villa had like two players waiting.
Yeah, John Stones didn't want that to be his first game back.
No, goodness.
Like, if you take a highlight cut of Villa's press,
yeah,
and City have the ball in like either at the back or in midfield, and you overdub that bit from the remake of The Wicker Man where he's just going, no, not the bees, not the bees, not the bees. It syncs up perfectly. I know they're not nicknamed the bees, but it's perfect. It was that kind of just like, nah, get them off. They're everywhere. And that's how good Villa were. And if you look at the kind of expected threat or like the field tilt or anything like that, it plays out like a City home game, but in Villa's favour. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And you just think like, no, like usually teams don't do that to City in that way. I mean, you look at the amount of attempts that they had, what was it like 20 odd to 2?
Yeah.
Like City just did not pose a threat really in the same way that they, even in games that they don't win, but they usually kind of knock on the door a bit. It just never felt like, I mean, if anything, I think the scoreline probably flattered City a little bit. This could have been 2. It could have possibly been 3, actually.
Yeah, I think three would have been a slight, yeah.
Yeah, that would have been catfishy, but Douglas Luiz hit the post, right?
Yeah, gorgeous.
In the second half as well. And John McGinn had a chance that he probably should have done better on as well in the first half.
Yeah, that attempt that was tip wide should have been a corner from Edison.
Yeah, and then there was that one where Douglas Luiz kind of caught, like the ball deflected up in the air, and then he kind of like had quite a close range effort, but Edison got across and made a really good save from like point blank range.
Oh, and Pau Torres, the top corner one, the slightly better player.
Oh, yeah,
in the corner.
Yeah.
Yeah, first half.
Just Villa all round, like super impressive. And I was saying in the Writers' House group that, because obviously their next game is Arsenal at home.
Yeah.
And I was like, I really hope this is Villa's like, you know, performance for the week.
It was very Bielsa, this performance, actually. Very Bielsa, which is actually, you know, I'm not saying that Arsenal fans have any kind of, there's no love lost over that, not working out. But it's just, I would like to just sort of put a pin in this and say, this was the Emery ball that the Emirates in a different lifetime at a parallel universe might have seen.
Maybe not.
It's not about grudges. I'm not saying it for that.
I'm not saying it's a grudge thing. I'm saying in terms of the positive,
this is as exciting and as front foot an Emery team as I've seen.
Yeah.
It was generally like, it wasn't reactive football. This is the thing that was so thrilling about and why I was so excited. I actually went, sounds quite sad to say this, but I don't think I've had that much fun watching football outside like Champions League knockout.
Mm.
It felt genuinely, look, City weren't really at it, but they were forced out of their rhythm because you saw the moment they lost a bit of intensity, Villa, the one patch they had was the double save from Martinez from Haaland.
That was a really good save. That was it. They were the only two shots that City had, I think.
Those the only two, and that little phase there when Foden beautiful inroads, closing up very well on the flank. Bernardo Silva recycling the ball really, really well, really efficiently. And that one moment when Villa lost intensity, which I think is good news for Arsenal, because I don't think, I think Villa were incredible the other day, but I just don't think you can produce two performances that intensity back to back. I just don't think it's...
Well, I mean, you don't know.
I'd love to be, love to be wrong. Love to be wrong.
I mean, I hope you're not wrong.
But they flew. They I mean, it was just, I think it was Beryl. There's a thing that Guardiola teams do, that teams do that beat Guardiola teams, and it's you have to raise the stakes on them. You have to basically take their approach and go to take it to a higher level, dial it up. We've seen so many teams do that in recent years. We've seen, we've seen a few do it. We saw Bielsa's Leeds do it in the 1-1 draw at Elland Road. We saw Poch do it when he first got to the Premier League. You basically have to do whatever Pep is doing and just raise it. And it's very, very gutsy because it can get you beaten 4-0, as Bournemouth will tell you. But this was it. I got quite excited in the chat and I was like, this is the blueprint. But yeah, it is the blueprint, but it's always been the blueprint. And everyone's always known that if you do this to City, then you can get joy against them. The only question is, who can? And, you know, even though Stones was not the ideal performance to return with, Stone still did a couple of things where you're like, yeah, when it starts clicking again, City are going to be moving.
Yeah, City just need to learn how to how to control games again, because they've just lost that ability over the last few games. Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
And Rodri and Stones shuts a lot of that down.
Yeah, I mean, City have always shown, even over the last few years, that they will get stung once or twice a season. And it's usually, you know, sometimes it's at home, like Brentford did it, Palace have done it. You know, they get stung. Mm. I think that the difference with this is that, like, with those games, you know, it's usually like 82% possession for City and 38 shots on goal and they get done 2-1 or something. This time it was properly comprehensive. And I think that off the back of that run of three straight draws, three draws in the league, in games that they've not been vastly outplayed, but they've not been able to control to the level that they want to control games, I think to be done like this is a little bit, I wouldn't say worrying, because it kind of feels like City need this, you know, darkest before the dawn thing every year to almost motivate them around Christmas.
Yes, and that's right, yeah.
And I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they just went on a tear now, because it's four games in a row that they've not won in the Premier League, and for a Manchester City side, that is just not good enough.
But it's the first time Pep's ever been four games that win in the league, I think. That's
wow. Well, there you go.
He's lost. Someone's due a hiding. Someone is due an abs. That's the thing we know. Someone is due a cooking.
I mean, they go away to Luton on the weekend, so who knows?
Although Luton, shout out to Luton, because they listen. Luton,
well, hang on. Before we move on to Luton, let's shout out Villa one final time, because they're up to third in the Premier League. They're 2 points clear of City. They're two points behind Liverpool, and they're 4 points behind Arsenal. So they're not just pushing for top four. They're trying to step into a title race unnoticed. You know, you're just like, I didn't see you there. Villa, you're here. I've been here a while, actually. Just don't mind me. But anyway, yep, Arsenal at home on the weekend. I'm not looking forward to that game at all.
I can't wait.
Yeah, well, you enjoy it. I'm going to be hiding behind the sofa. Let's segue on to Luton Arsenal very quickly, because it happened on Tuesday night, 4-3 to Arsenal. Last minute winner from Declan Rice.
What a game.
Yeah, great game. A really weird game in the sense that just like, it doesn't feel like, I don't think Luton score this many goals at home. Arsenal don't score that many goals away, and Arsenal don't also concede that many goals in games. So it was just a very, I saw a few people kind of trying to overanalyze it in the sense of like, this is why Arsenal won't win the league kind of thing. And I'm like, no, it's not. It just happens. Like, it's December, it's freezing, you're playing at Kenilworth Road,
exactly.
Sometimes some shit's just going to happen.
Raucous. It's
like,
raucous.
Just don't, it, sometimes, man, ain't that deep. Football. People take football way too seriously sometimes. And this, I think, was one of those nights where people were a bit like, but what does it mean? And it's just like, sometimes goals just go in. Sometimes you concede three goals off minimal XG. It just happens, man.
And not being funny, but is not the definition of championship metal getting it done at Kenilworth Road on a cold midweek night. Like, that was a defining performance, in the sense that the resilience they showed to get the result there, despite never truly having control, Never true.
No, I think they can. I think Arsenal controlled the game overall. I just think that. Well, I think they would. No, I don't know, man. I think they were on another night. This game's 4-1, and no one's talking about it.
Yeah, but this on
Luton
this
were good.
Night.
Don't get me wrong. Luton were good. Don't get me wrong. I'm just. No, I'm not saying. I'm saying based on that exact the exact patterns of play. Right. If you think about it, two massive Raya errors. I think for goals, and a really good set piece goal. I think Luton were very good. But it wasn't like chance upon chance was raining down on Arsenal's goal. I think this game could have played out exactly the same way. And on another night, it could have been 3-1, 4-1. And I don't think many people are talking about it.
It felt more like a failure to sort of grasp, as I watched them try to grasp like a greasy bar of soap. It felt like, you know, but that, for example, the goal, the Arsenal's opener, and just not really having that period of 5 minutes of just settling down. Does that make sense? They didn't take all the drama out of it, I think, was the thing for me. When they took the lead, and I was like, okay, they're now going to, like, you know, get a second goal, halftime, shut up shop. And they never quite did that. And Luton have been doing this all year, to be fair. They did it against Liverpool. They've done it in games they've lost. In terms of games I've watched Luton in, I would say this. They're probably the team whose results least reflect the quality of the performances they've been producing. Yeah. Which is why I think actually it's positive for them in terms of the season. Alex,
I'd say them and Wolves, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, it's positive for them in terms of that, but what impressed me so much about Arsenal, I mean, look, we're going to talk about Havertz many more times this season. I just love that he's got into his groove. Mm. That run that he made for his goal, you know, yes, it's quite a simple finish in the end, but it's just, it's the way that he's gambling on himself, actually.
I think he's just learnt the movements of the team. He's learnt the team. The team have learnt him. Gabriel Jesus being there, I think, is key because I think he's a really, really good striker for him. And, listen, man, like we both know that all of that talk about Havertz was just nonsense, to be honest. Like
Four different scorers.
Yeah, but we knew how good he was, and we knew that like actually it was gonna take time, and we knew that he'd been kind of moved around at Chelsea, and he's gonna have dips in form. This is what I think. It's just like footballers have dips in form. Mm. I just think he's a really good footballer. I listened to there's a really good Jorginho interview on The Athletic.
Yes. Yes.
On The Athletic football podcast. And first of all, I just want to get Jorginho on here because he just sounds like a right laugh. Genuinely funny. Like, but no, he was talking about how good Kai Havertz is. Mm. And he said this line, which I always love it when players say stuff like this, basically like, if you love football, it's impossible not to love Kai. And I was just like,
it's so good.
A proper like, pew pew.
That's like people go like, he who is tired of London is tired of life. It's that kind of energy, isn't it? You're like, it's definitive. Then it makes you ashamed.
It's basically the footballing those who know thing, which is so funny because it triggers an insecurity in people who don't know to the point
the
where they're just
I'm
like,
a Kai Havertz fan and even I felt ashamed of myself. It's like, what do I... But what I was saying, also, can I just say this before we move on too quickly? Just to Declan Rice, not just for his late winner, but the consequential nature of that, you know, choosing... And I've said this 1,000 times already, but I've got to say it once more. Choosing Arsenal over Man City is such a vote of self-confidence, right? It's such a vote of belief in your own abilities because the procession was there. The place was laid. Gundogan's out. You're coming into a space where you'll basically have the keys to that midfield for years. And that is not guaranteed titles, but virtually like, you know, Declan Rice in that midfield, you're looking at like, 3 out of the next 5 titles straight. And he said no to all of that. He said no to all of the money because he wanted to gamble on something different. And I think it's one of the gutsiest things I've seen. And people don't talk much about guts in football in terms of transfers, but I respected that move so much at the time and even more now because his connection with that Arsenal midfield, you look now at like Rice, Odegaard and Havertz, and I love the blend.
Big dudes as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Odegaard's the smallest out of the lot of those, and he's not tiny.
Big dudes who are showing out, who are actually now showing the bulk, and you're noticing now that they're playing in sync more. And we've said this about was the one last thing on Havertz. There was the point of him is that he takes the team to a level it hasn't yet reached. That if you unlock his skills and the fluidity is there, we've seen it in patches, but we're seeing more and more now. You're seeing a higher level of like Arsenal play. And some have remarked that Arsenal are less thrilling this year, but in funny ways, I've enjoyed watching them more because I've enjoyed watching the variety of ways they can break you down.
I am much preferring watching Arsenal control games.
Mm.
Like, yeah. I'm fine with that, actually. Yeah, yeah. Because I think problem solving against teams who week after week are making it really difficult for you is more impressive to me than what Arsenal did last season.
I think so. And I say this, and I don't mean that to disrespect their efforts. I think this is what they're doing is the evolution.
Yeah.
This team is the evolution of last year. And last year was a joy to watch a lot of the time. But this feels really substantial.
You can't play free-flowing attacking football if there is zero space to play free-flowing attacking football. You saw what they did. When they've had the opportunity to do so, they've done it. Like
cut loose, yeah.
Bournemouth and...
Lens, yeah.
Lens. Like just...
Bournemouth giving gifts. Oh, no.
Yeah, but I kind of admired that from Iriola.
I always respect it. Yeah, yeah.
If you look back at some of those early results for Bournemouth now, he's just basically laying the groundwork to where they've become now. It was just like, we're going to get hammered. We're going to get beaten, but don't worry about it, actually. But back on this with Luton, we've talked about Luton quite a lot in terms of, you know, picking up points and I actually think they'll probably stay up. I've got a feeling. There's something about that side that, like I say, I think that, you know, I just pulled the stats up. 67% possession for Arsenal, 2.26 expected goals to 0.51 for Luton, 23 shots to 6, 9 on target to 4, 3 big chances to 1. It was a really comprehensive performance from Arsenal. Mm. But also, Luton have showed that they can hurt teams. To get so close to getting a point, especially after the point at home to Liverpool, I'm really interested to see what happens in the City game on the weekend, because coming off the back of both those results, I don't think City really want to go there.
Me neither. I agree.
Especially if you saw how much they struggled against Sheffield United earlier in the season. Now, I know that, that was a while ago, but...
Same principle, you're right.
This isn't any disrespect to West Ham at all, but the ideal place to kind of go after a game like that is probably like someone like the London Stadium, you know, where you're far away from the pitch and you've got a big pitch to play and you can just kind of like, I think going to somewhere like Kenilworth Road where it's really tight, everyone's right on you, it just doesn't make it feel comfortable.
Right, yeah, I see that. You know, it's funny, it's and mentioning West Ham City is interesting because I remember watching that game and like I remember how City had to be so attentive, you know, West Ham had to be so attentive. That pitch is so big that West Ham had to play counter-attack to perfection. And they played that first half. They were a goal up, I think. But my God, it was such hard work, Ryan, that I felt like I don't even do it for 90 minutes. And soon, City just kept taking the medicine, kept working the angles and got their breakthrough. And in the end, actually looked really, really good. And I think you're totally right.
I'm not saying that City would want to play West Ham. I'm just saying like they want to go to a stadium like that where it's a bit more expansive, yeah.
No, to your point, you're right. Like you're completely right. In terms of a place that you can eventually play your football, like City just need to eventually get going. And I think that, you know, Luton, Kenilworth Road, it was actually kind of like an FA Cup tie vibe there. Yeah. But in terms of the intensity of it, it was just raw. Like, yeah, loved it.
So that meant Arsenal extended their lead at the top before Liverpool won on... Wednesday. They beat Sheffield United 2-0. Ooh, let's talk about this very
slightly
quickly.
Slightly hard work
at that. But also,
Klopp afterwards.
Was Sheffield United robbed?
Mm.
I think there's a penalty before the second goal, and I think the second goal shouldn't have stood. That's a foul by Nunez in the second goal.
Yeah,
I think.
Fair enough.
It's just a foul.
I think so.
I mean, it's just a foul.
Yeah,
but I think the one from Konate, the push in the box, is also a foul. I think that's a penalty.
And that's right.
But Liverpool would give more than good value for it. But
this is Sheffield United's thing, though, isn't it? And look, I know that clubs like Sheffield United and Luton, they find it slightly patronising when you talk like this about, like, you know, late reverses going against them. But it is true; these margins are so small.
Yeah, but Liverpool like absolutely like dominated. You know,
so they did.
I think Liverpool deserves to win the game, but a couple of key decisions right at the end. I mean, could have made it a little bit sticky for Liverpool.
I just think if you're hanging in there as long as Sheffield United did, it's still frustrating not to close it out.
Yeah. I mean, because it came right at the end of the game, right? It was that kind of period of like 5-6 minutes at the end of the game where Sheffield United actually had the best spell of the game.
Mm.
And if that penalty comes then, that's...
Right, who knows?
I mean, it's all ifs and buts and stuff, but whatever. But
they're just not getting much luck at the moment, are they?
I mean, if you look down the bottom, Sheffield United are only 4 points off safety, so it's not a million miles away. I think that bottom probably with the
it's
results.
A deceptive, can I be honest?
No, go for it.
Hot take. It's a deceptive league table because everyone saying... goes, this club's in a crisis. Look at the league table. It's not a crisis. Like you look at like
he's saying it's the Barclays Catfish League.
It is a catfish league.
I mean, the whole thing is a catfish league, yeah.
Look, and especially this season, because we were told Manchester United in a crisis. Look at the league table. Okay, the goal difference is nothing to sing about, but you've had like a couple of wins in the bounce. You've had a loss here and there. Look, it's mediocre, but it's not crisis.
I see Manchester United as a picture of efficiency, contrary to popular belief. Played 15, won 9, drawn none, lost 6, scored 18, conceded 18.
There it is.
Sixth in the table, 9 points off top.
It's just average. It's not a crisis. Like, a crisis is what's happened to Lyon, right? That's a crisis.
Oh my God.
Yeah, right. That's a crisis. Like,
Ajax into the European spots.
And the Premier League, we've said this 1,000 times, but this was our nerdy and geeky or whatever it is, but the quality of the coaching is such that you always have a chance. You have to, you know, with the resources, because the resources are so wildly skewed differently in the Premier League, and now we've got Chris Wilder back at Sheffield United, who's obviously a great footballing mind. The one thing that like levels the playing field, apart from a couple of major injuries really, is the coaching. And with the quality of these coaches, even teams right down the bottom have always got a chance over the course of a season. I do believe that.
It got to the point where I think, like, sometimes in this situation, I think you can just imagine Wilder's voice being a bit more authoritative. I nearly said authoritarian then. He's not.
I know.
It's not Moussa Wonga. Sometimes something like that, you know, someone who's been there and done it, took him to Premier League last time as well. And yeah, we'll see. But they host Brentford on Saturday, so a nice stripy derby.
Good to have someone to remind you kind of who you are and what you're capable of, maybe. We'll see.
Yeah. We've gone for ages without talking about this, and we need to talk about this because I feel like if Villa City was a picture of high quality on Wednesday, there was a tasty little alternative at Old Trafford. I don't want to be mean, but this game, as a neutral, was genuinely really fun. Manchester United 2, Chelsea 1, in a game which was really fun, but let's say not of the highest quality.
I felt like, you know, watching the two screens, I felt like I was watching the multiverse. And on the left, I sort of, the, you know, the efficient universe and the technical universe where everything, flying cars and like, you know, sustainable, like clean technology for the entire planet. And on the right was like, everything is chaos. You went on the street, even the plants are biting you. Like everything was attacking everything. And watching this game was incredible. It felt like there were like valleys through the midfield in both directions.
Really, so there
was
strange. A
thing, Mayo, we were talking in the chat, Mayo was going like, you know, Cole Palmer's struggling with his back to goal. And I'm like, why is any forward playing their back to goal in a game this open? Like, you should just be high and wide and just cutting late, because all this game is late runs. Actually, screw it. Some of it was early runs.
Yeah.
To the point where when I wrote to you, I was like, Amrabat, this is a classic symptom of this game, of the chaos in this game. Amrabat played a pass that he didn't play anything like in the World Cup.
Yeah, it was very unlike him.
It was completely unlike him. So I remember seeing it thinking, yeah, this game is wild because Amrabat is not that footballer. This is so out of character.
But I think the whole game just seemed to be this kind totally. Of, and it sounds like we're dunking on it, because there were some moments of good quality, obviously. And Cole Palmer's finish was unbelievable for the goal. Like, just very smart, very kind of patient. And I think both McTominay goals were really good as well.
Lovely.
Scotty McGoals, that's what I'm going to call him.
Well, Carl loves him as a McStriker, Carl calls him. He loves him as a striker. I'm now wondering which team he would start for as a striker in the Premier League.
Manchester United. Play him up top with Erasmus. Big man, big man.
I don't like a two for United, though. I love that idea.
Musa, I'm going to pick my mic up here and I'm going to go serenade you. Drop Erasmus.
Stop it.
Play McTominay up top.
He's
honestly
a beacon of joy.
I think the reason that I'm being a bit silly about this game was because two clubs who have spent a fortune, an absolute fortune between them, and the amount of like pretty easy passes that were just played straight to opposition players, or the ball was bouncing around everywhere, or something was like hoofed into the air. The quality of it compared to, I think, because we were talking about the Villa City game, I don't think we should go too deep on it, because like I said with the Luton Arsenal game, actually, sometimes it just happens.
It wasn't that deep.
It's just sometimes I mean, we've all played in games of this, right? At all levels, right? Even at the level we played at, where sometimes everyone's, it's like, are we all high? Is everyone high on this football pitch?
Because it felt like kickabout. You know, like we had the, at school, we had the tuck shop. And like everyone's like had all their refreshers. Everyone's
no, got honestly, sugar rush. Like, and the afternoon lessons like, are
yay,
carnage.
Yay! Do you remember those sweets called Nerds that were like they had like sugar?
Yeah. Oh my god!
Cased in like hard candy. It was like that. Just everyone's just like down a bunch of nerds and gone out there, and there was no one could get control of the midfield. And I remember thinking actually the one criticism I would have of anyone in the game was not fully understanding. It's chaotic. We need to actually lean fully into that. Stop trying to control this. The game's out of control. Just actually run wild. And I think actually Mudryk, to be fair, Mudryk had a couple of bad misses, but he probably embodied the spirit of the game best. And it's not an accident that he got that assist because he kind of was like, oh, it's chaotic. It's open. I'm running into gaps. Like some of his final ball is always that concern, but the movement he made was very encouraging. The incursions he made were really, really impressive. I just think that Chelsea attack has got something quite exciting about it when you have him and Nkunku and Palmer working in some kind of combination and with Sterling as well. I'm trying to look for positives here because I don't like dig people out too much.
No, I just think this is one of those games where, I mean, it even happened like when with the substitutions, Reece James came on and just like caught the chaos bug straight away.
The chaos virus, yeah. Actually, we need to say this. Put a pin in this. There are certain games that have caught the chaos flu where it spreads through the entire and everyone's got the bug. And I think this was just definitely one of them. Can we just say, actually, on the since United obviously won, just quickly on the incidents in the game, penalty to United.
Yeah, it's a penalty.
Yeah, Bruno Fernandes like has it saved low down. I mean, this is the peril of hitting slow penalties, I think, as pointed out. But just to credit McTominay with that goal scoring and quite exciting looking ahead for the Euros. You've got McGinn in great form. McTominay's, you know, looking good. It's a very well coached side, Scotland. So
he's calling him McTominay's.
Yeah, I think I did. I was skipped over it. I enjoy saying his name too much, but really, really happy for him. And I just couldn't help but think, is there not? Look, and obviously he loves playing at United. I was thinking out loud to yourself, going, oh, I wonder if there's a Premier League team, maybe like a West Ham, where he could be like a nine for them and like a starting number nine.
Oh, booster. This is like...
Sorry, got excited about that stuff.
We've reached late era Okwonga here where he stopped trying to turn everyone into an eight. Now he's trying to turn everyone into a fucking nine.
Well, I was a striker, but I don't like to talk about it. Anyway, listen, enough about me.
Didn't score enough goals.
I've got the receipts.
Quickly on this game, let's just wrap up because Chelsea are 10th.
Mm.
They go to Everton on the weekend.
Mm.
And the thing that's really confusing about Chelsea is that I don't know if they'll win that game 3-0 or lose that game 3-0. I just don't know. There have been green shoots there for Chelsea and signs of progress. And I do think that it's going to take a long while. But it's just, I think this is the weirdest thing about this game for me, was just like just looking at two clubs that should just be, they should make a lot more sense than they do.
Right, yeah.
Right, quick shout for Fulham, who beat Forest 5-0 and were super, super, super good. Two for Iwobi, two for Raheem Jimenez, one for Kearney.
Such a well-coached team.
They just look really good. I think Forest have been on a really bad run. They lost four straight in the league now.
Pereira looked great as well.
Yeah.
Everyone just fits. And also absorbing the loss of Mitrovic. Shout out to him for that, you know.
I mean, I still can't believe Wolves let Raul Jimenez go, to be honest. I mean, I know he's not scored a lot this season, but he's only scored three goals in the Premier League.
Mm.
Two of them in this game. But I don't know, just always seemed to be like a handy player.
If you look at Wolves now, sometimes you lose a player like him and it changes the focus of the attack and it allows you to be less predictable, you know? A lot of talk about Arsenal's number nine, but actually, you know, remember all that time we used to talk about like Arsenal getting a more conventional nine like Vlahovic.
Mm.
But actually, look at Arsenal's attack now. You wouldn't swap that really for anything because the fluidity of it, the unpredictability, is what wins you titles, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I like Ivan Toney as a striker, but the amount of money that it would take, I would not do that move at all. I would much rather hold out for someone like Victor Osimhen if Arsenal were going to do that.
Oh my God! Wow. Yeah. Can I say, actually, while we're on Osimhen, very, very quickly, shout out to him being voted Players Player of the Year. in Serie A. And also, you had that amazing that Lille posted on their Instagram.
Sick.
Him, Money Mike Maignan, and Rafael Leão all honoured by their fellow players in Serie A. And they came out of Lille. Isn't that just incredible?
So good.
I love that for them, man. Love that for them.
Where were we? Fulham. Yes. I thought Steve Cooper gave a really good interview after the game where he was talking very honestly about how he doesn't feel like his job is under threat because he's not really thinking about that at all and that he only wants what's best for Forest. I mean, personally, I think that he's still... I think they should keep him at the moment. I think that pulling... When you're 6 points clear of the relegation zone in December, I don't think you need to panic, actually. If you look at the run that Bournemouth have been on, and then you've got Palace, Wolves, Fulham, Brentford, Chelsea above you in the rest in the bottom half of the table. Sorry, Chelsea technically top 10, my bad. The amount of work, good work he's done there with the amount of turnover of players that he's had in the last couple of years, I think has been pretty amazing, actually. Mm. And I hope they don't fire him yet.
What he's done has been unique at Nottingham Forest. I mean, the turnover he's had at Nottingham Forest is only equivalent, I can think, to maybe like a kind of like a Barry Fry at Peterborough. And Barry Fry was the person moving those players in and out. So that's like, it was coming from somewhere else, you know. So the job he's had to do is unique. And I think the danger of replacing someone like a Cooper is you're taking away someone who gets the club and you're judging the club on these individual results. Like, it's very, look, and I say this, obviously as a United fan, I keep talking about it and it bores everyone, but the time when United lost 5-3 and 5-0 and 6-3 back-to-back weeks, and there was no conversation about sacking Ferguson because the general direction of the club, people understood that these were blips. And yeah, look, okay, it's not desirable to lose 5-0 to Fulham, but there is an element where you can just park that result and just move. You know, and you're going to get... Look, because this Premier League is so well coached, you'll have nights where you turn up at 40%, you'll get absolutely cleaned out. United got done 7-0 by Liverpool, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Sheffield United got done 8-0 the other week, and they lose narrowly at Anfield. Yes, they get hammered in terms of possession, but it's just a league where you're going to get these terrible losses, and it's really important in the age of like social media or whatever not to kind of get caught up in it. And credit to the fans actually singing Cooper's name, because match-going fans are quite a good barometer, I think.
Away fans especially.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, yeah, Cooper should hang in there and a couple of decent results, and this can be quickly forgotten, actually. You know,
just a quick shout out for some of the Fulham finishes. All very, very good indeed.
Yes.
And the
Jimenez's back heel.
But the one that, the Jimenez's first one that kind of went right into the top corner and just bounced down. I was just like, oh, so aesthetically pleasing. Like,
yeah. There have been a few of those actually. The Trent free kick that ended up going down as an own goal the other day was another one. Mm. Very aesthetic.
All right, let's shout out the rest of the games. Wolves beating Burnley on Tuesday. Another goal from Hwang.
Yeah.
Bournemouth beating Palace 2-0. Always a good result.
Yeah.
3 wins and a draw in the last 4 in the league for Bournemouth. And the draw is against Villa.
Iraola doing work.
Very good indeed. Brighton beating Brentford 2-1.
Pascal Gross got a nice one here. I bet if he had like a Premier League five-a-side team to put together, I bet he'd be in a lot of people's like five-a-side select.
A very, very fun couple of match days in the Premier League. That, I mean, you know, we're not over. We're not done yet. Spurs against West Ham tonight, and Everton hosting Newcastle. Fixture. Yeah, I mean, it's never no love lost between those two.
That's a fixture with zero chill.
No chill at all. Just very quickly, I've just seen something pop up that says Inter Miami are in advanced talks to sign Luis Suarez from Gremio. So they're fully
The band back together. Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Let's go to Germany very quickly.
Yes.
This is from Get German Football News. The first time in 20 years, only 3 Bundesliga sides are in the quarterfinals.
Amazing.
No winner in the last 25 years is in the quarterfinals.
That's amazing.
And 3 teams who have never won the competition are in the quarterfinals. So,
what's the full lineup, please?
The results from this week were Bayer Leverkusen beating Paderborn 3-1, Saarbrücken beating another Bundesliga side. They knocked out Eintracht Frankfurt this time. Hertha went through against HSV on penalties, which is wild.
Bit of a heartbreaker, that.
I mean, it was a 3-3 all in after extra time. It was a very entertaining game, actually. Stuttgart knocked out Dortmund. They beat them 2-0. They were really good, Stuttgart, actually.
Yeah.
First half, Dortmund were quite... just not great. Stuttgart just looked really well drilled. Dortmund don't look so well drilled at the moment. But the goal kind of woke them up a bit. They had their best period of play like not long after Stuttgart scored. Grassi opened the scoring. And the goal disallowed. Jamie Vardy-Gittins was in the offside position when Fulkrug squared it. Just a little bit of a mistimed run.
Yeah, it was. Like 2 feet forward.
Yeah. And then Silas got the second for Stuttgart. More than good value for it. And that's the second time they beat Dortmund recently. Tuesday's games, Kaiserslautern beating Nürnberg 2-0. What a fixture. Fortuna Düsseldorf beat Magdeburg 2-1 away. And Gladbach beat Wolfsburg after extra time 1-0.
Pretty good for the Saarland. Saarbrücken and like Kaiserslautern coming up big.
Well, yeah, but not so good for Hamburg. Lost 4-1 to St. Pauli. But they were 1-1. And they made it difficult. It was only until... the last half hour or so that St. Pauli started to pull away. The draw is going to be made next Sunday. But yeah, just a fun week of German Cup.
Very much so.
I'm going to leave the Women's Nations League to flow and the gang on counter-pressed. But before we... Was there any other football you want to talk about before we just big up Christine Sinclair?
Just very, very quickly. We didn't mention it the other day because I was away, but just a quick shout for Inter's 3-0 win in Naples over Napoli. In Serie A, just confirming, I think, where the two clubs kind of are at the moment. Inter just extremely authoritative and just looking like they've got another gear to go in the Champions League. So they're one to watch for sure. Napoli struggling. The goals were beautiful for Inter, actually. Some really, really nice, some nice strikes up in the mix there.
Nice strikes up in the mix.
All to mention, yeah. But yes, we must move last of all to Christine Sinclair.
Yeah, Christine Sinclair. Canadian legend.
Mm.
She finishes her international career after more than 330 appearances for Canada. She's the second on the list of the most capped women's players behind the US's Christine Lilly. This is from a Guardian piece by Mariam Karabi.
331?
Yep. Wild. And 190 goals international football. She's 40 and she's still going to play another year for Portland Thorns. And she was named Canada's Player of the Year 14 times.
Oh my God. You know, I imagine when I think, she's like this, sort of, when I think of her, I think if they did like an animated, like short film of her career, you imagine like all the hotels that would go through, like imagine like her passport just filling up with stamps and just her playing in every single climate throughout the year, ankle deep in snow, on like baked hard pitches and just delivering the quality throughout. And the thing about her is the range of her finishing. We talked earlier about sort of, you know, the complete midfield performance from John McGinn and the complete forward. She could score from anywhere. Like you would, there was kind of danger anywhere, but kind of from 30 yards out. Free kicks, close range, penalty box predator, heading, you know, headed goals is obviously outstanding. And the humility as well, like someone who is very sort of, there's something very unfussy about it actually.
Mm.
Like this elite level striker who just had this incredible efficiency throughout. And yeah, just what a legacy. And someone who played throughout the evolution of the game as well, which is not easy. It's not easy. You know, you look at, for Luton Town, he had, what's this guy, Pelle Murdoch and Panzu, who basically played, he's the first ever player to play all the way from non-league, all the way up into the Premier League. Mm. And Christine Sinclair basically played through the growing professions of the game and remained relevant and remained constant as a kind of North Star of the game. That's kind of incredible in itself, to evolve through the game and to still be delivering at that level. So yeah, an incredible career. And one of the kind of like football's Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, complete put like pioneer. Four faces up there. Yeah.
Complete pioneer, all-time, like we said, all-time international, leading international goal scorer.
Mm.
I'm just so pleased that she's playing another year and gets to have like a full kind of...
A farewell tour.
Proper farewell tour because, you know, doing it on the international stage is it's just different, I think, to, you know, when you have, they had these two, they had these two friendlies against Australia, which they beat, they won, I think it was 5-0 and 1-0. But yeah, so getting a proper sign off on home soil before obviously one final NWSL season, I think is just
can
really
you imagine
nice.
As well, can you imagine the fun she's going to have watching the 2026 World Cup as well?
Yeah.
Just like the ambassadorial work, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really excited to see what she does after her career because I think she's someone who just carries such gravitas.
Yeah.
And yeah, just congrats on international retirement. Glad that she's doing one more year. And I'm sure there'll be many, many, many more wonderful things said about her when she retires completely from football.
Yeah.
But yeah, props to Christine Sinclair.
Absolutely.
Is there anything else we need to talk about today? I think we're good. Good?
All good.
Any
yeah,
books
yeah.
any books you want to push? Done any written any books recently? You actually haven't. I'm a bit like this, I can't even roll this gag out anymore because it's a little bit too it's a little bit too close to the it's a little bit touching a nerve.
Someone got in touch on Instagram the other day. I was like, oh Moose, they softened me up with oh, how's it going? You know, they play into my ego, how's it going? It's like, get some new books out. You've been quiet for a while. Oh my goodness. Drew me with the compliments and then cooked me.
Wow. I mean, that's basically what I did when we met. All right, everyone, we're gonna leave it to it.
Yes.
Don't forget to check Wright's House and Counterpressed and all the other good stuff on The Ringer. Don't forget to check the Stadio Archers players on Spotify, all the tunes we play on each episode. We are playing out on El Anthony, a track called We've Been In Love Too Long. Anything you would like to add, Musa Ogwonga?
Yeah, I'd just like to say to all the lovers out there, you can never be in love too long. And that's all from me.
Oh, shit.
There we go.
You should write.
Some depth for the heads.
Some depth for the heads. Get out of here. All right, everyone, much love. Have a great weekend. We'll be back with you on Monday.
See you then.
Another girl has caught my eye. I don't want to hurt you, you don't want to hurt me. I'm trying to save us both some misery. Our love once was strong, what in the world could have went wrong? This feeling we had are gone. We've been in love.